either one of these any good?
Wow, this is a good movie.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, well, the director from yesterday doesn't think so.
It stinks.
You're sorry. You waste all our film.
It's so bad.
Nostalgia and horror leading the way this week with mixed results. Let's dive in. This is the Screening Room Podcast. And she is Hope Madden.
He's George Wolf.
And we are from madwolf.com. Yes, some big ones opening up in theaters this weekend. None bigger than the new Ghostbusters. When the discovery of an ancient artifact unleashes an evil force, Ghostbusters, new and old, must join forces to protect their home and save the world from a second ice age. It's Ghostbusters Frozen Empire.
The parables tell of an unimaginable evil commanding an army of ghosts. The power to kill by fear itself.
Like, literally scared to death?
We might be looking at a second ice age.
We're gonna need all the help we can get.
Let's get to work.
Can I be of any help?
Melnitz in uniform!
Yeah!
If there's something strange, if there's something weird, who are people gonna call?
Ghostbusters, what do you want?
We're the Ghostbusters. Can I tell you something else?
What?
Buster makes me feel good.
It makes me feel good.
Yeah, so this is the follow-up after the reboot 3 years ago, which we thought overall was pretty entertaining pretty well done.
People loved it.
They did, and I understand why. Mm-hmm. Now, for us, the end was just too much of a
too
sledgehammer
much.
Of fan service.
Yes.
I mean, they went overboard, and then they went even more overboard,
yes.
And that was a little much for us. But they're back with the next installment, Frozen Empire, and it's got the same writers, Jason Reitman, of course, Ivan's son, who mm-hmm. did the original, and Gil Keenan. They also both wrote Afterlife. The last one. But now, instead of Jason Reitman directing, Gil Keenan takes the helm of this one. And so it's got good and bad. I mean, it dials back on the fan service. You still have some, not like the first one.
You still have quite a bit, just not as much as the first
one. Right. But at the same time, the story, the narrative just seems like it's overpacked, and it takes really just too long to get fun.
Yeah. Yes. I think that is true. And being so overpacked, it brings up a lot of stuff and then just drops them and doesn't go anywhere with them. So it's not only that it has too much stuff going on, it has just too damn many people in it.
It's got a lot. And it does give the original Ghostbusters, specifically Dan Aykroyd and Ernie Hudson, mm-hmm. more to do.
Yeah.
They're more a part of it from the beginning.
Right. You got some Bill Murray sightings, but he doesn't have as big of a role as the other two at all.
But
no.
Still a little bit more than last time. So they're more involved with the entire story. And then you've got the new group, led, of course, by Paul Rudd and Carrie Coon. They're still together. And then you've got Carrie's daughter. She's kind of the main character,
the lead,
I guess.
Really?
Phoebe.
Yeah. Yeah.
Phoebe Spengler, Egon's granddaughter.
McKenna Grace,
who's great. Mm-hmm. Let's say again, one of our all-time favorite interviews that we've been able to have. She was on when Afterlife came out. She was nice enough to come on, and we talked about the movie and what she's got going on. She's great, and she's great again.
She's great in everything. Go back to when she was a very small child.
Yep.
She's great in everything.
She really is. So they've taken over, and basically, there's an artifact, an ancient artifact, where a demon is inside, mm-hmm. and the demon gets out,
mm-hmm.
and basically. It's more convoluted than that. It's more complicated than that. But that's the basic enemy that they're fighting. And Kumail Nanjiani has joined this time. And he ends up selling this artifact. He just wants some fast money. And he sells this artifact to Dan Aykroyd. But then it turns out that his character, Nadim, could play an important role in trying to defeat this demon.
Yeah, and he's charming and funny in everything he's in, as is Paul Rudd. Paul Rudd continues to just be a delight. You know, Carrie Coon, she's a funny choice. She's just a really, really good actor.
She is.
And so it's fun for me to see her be sort of a lighthearted character, and they've got some good lines. It's just, like I said earlier, there's just too many people in it. There are too many people, because then they bring, really, the whole cast from the last.
Yeah, you've got Podcast, that kid played by Logan Kim. You've got Lucky, Celeste O'Connor, they're back. Oh, and then, of course, we haven't even mentioned the other Spengler grandchild, Trevor, played by Finn Wolfhard.
Yeah.
So he's back as well. So there are a lot of characters. You also bring back William Atherton.
Yes.
From who still wants to shut down the Ghostbusters.
That's right.
You've got all that going on. And to me, the storyline, the narrative felt most assured when it had to do with Phoebe sort of sharing her adolescent angst with the teenage ghost.
Mm-hmm.
And the teenage ghost is played by Emily Allen Lind, who you might remember from Dr. Sleep.
Yep.
That seemed like when it was most on its surest footing. But again, it took up time that and characters that were all part of the main, when balanced against all part of the main storyline, you're still fighting for airtime.
Yeah.
And you're fighting for attention.
Yeah.
And it was developed for a while, and then they're on to something else. And man, it's a full 2 hours long, and boy, if you just could have made it leaner and meaner and cropped about 20 minutes off
and three characters
and got to the fun earlier,
yeah,
it could have really saved it. It's not terrible.
No, and pretty middling.
Yeah, once the fun does kick in, well, then it is fun.
Mm-hmm.
But it takes a while to get there. And there are some laughs. There definitely are some laughs. It's not a laugh riot or
no.
anything, but there are some. And as you mentioned, some fan service. But it's not one. I think overall, the second one or the last one, Afterlife, was really, really fun and entertaining until, like we said, the finale just went overboard.
Yes.
And I get it because when it was done by, you know, his son, you're going to say a nice tip of the hat, not only to his father, but to Harold Ramis,
yeah.
who had passed away as
yeah.
well. So understandable. So it's less of that this time, but it's just not as fun. And the storytelling is not as streamlined this time. But you still got the Ghostbusters, and there always will be something fun about them.
Mm-hmm.
I think they've got a good new group of actors. And a good new group of Ghostbusters to start with and to carry on with.
Yep.
And it is always fun to see those older characters, especially Ernie Hudson. Ernie Hudson looks great.
Yeah, he does. We just rewatched The Crow the other day.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, he looks better now than he did in The Crow.
He looks great. Yeah. And I do like what they've done with his character.
Yeah.
Making Winston, he's now this big philanthropist.
And yeah.
It has his finger on the pulse of things. Mm-hmm. I do. It's just, man.
Honestly, I like what they did with Ray Stantz.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, that feels like Dan Aykroyd's character. That kind of feels like what he would have done as an older man. He would have just opened this little shop of curios.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that, and I thought that his character felt more integral to the actual plot. So all of the other ones felt to me like fan service. They really did. And as much as, you know, like anybody else, I want to see Bill Murray. Bill Murray was the original Ghostbusters. He was the whole movie. But I just thought, I really felt like they shoehorned in a lot of needless characters.
And I thought, honestly, the last on Afterlife, I thought, and again, until the end, mm-hmm. I thought mm-hmm. the fan service seemed more organic last
yeah.
time.
Yeah.
It seemed like natural that they would pull up all those old YouTube
right.
videos
yes.
of the Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
But, and I will say this, just this morning, I saw a brand new, or at least brand new to me, one I had not seen trailer. And it is full of must have been outtakes that don't make the movie, like little yuck-yucks from Bill Murray. So, I mean, it is funny, but it's not, you don't expect a big laugh a minute type
right,
of thing.
Right.
Some of the stuff, as often happens in the trailer, does not make the movie. But still, yeah, it's fine. It's fine. Just, we think, a tick down from last time out. And that is in all the theaters now, called Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. How about some more 80s nostalgia? Ex-UFC fighter Dalton takes a job as a bouncer at a Florida Keys roadhouse, only to discover that this paradise is not all it seems. It's the new version of Roadhouse.
Tell me about this bouncer.
Yeah, it's all nice, like he's Mr. Rogers or something, but then he'll haul off. Really interesting guy, overall.
Brand wants to take the roadhouse away from me. He wants to build some resort.
I should warn you. People have a certain way of getting things done around here.
Hey, fellas. Looks like you're having a smashing night. Dalton! I got a tip for you. Don't let no one get this close.
takes a lot to get me angry, but when I am, I just can't let go.
People seem a little aggressive around here.
Is that one a friend of yours?
No, I just broke his arm.
I think, you know, full disclosure, we think the Patrick Swayze classic is dumb as hell.
Yeah, and that's an unpopular opinion I'm finding out right now. Because
I mean, I thought, I did. I think I thought all this time people, like, ironically loved it, but recognized that it's dumb as hell. But I think there are a lot of people who don't.
Yeah, it really is dumb. And one of the things that this reboot does right is acknowledge the humor in the story.
Yeah.
And this turned out to be a lot of fun, and it surprised me how fun this movie is. This one is on Prime, and it was directed by Doug Liman.
Yeah,
he's got some good action movies under his belt.
Yeah.
Specifically, Edge of Tomorrow, that still should have been called Live, Die, Repeat. But and that's one of the top draws about this movie, the fight choreography, the stunts, very well done. And the humor in it. One of the writers was on the writing team of The Nice Guys.
One of the funniest movies ever.
Funny. And this is not that funny.
No.
But there are some good lines.
There are.
And Jake Gyllenhaal plays
Who
Dalton.
Who taught you shapes?
Dalton this time. he's an ex-UFC fighter with a haunted past. Let's admit that. And he's recruited by Jessica Williams, from
Daily Show
at one time, to help her save this roadhouse in the Florida Keys. And it's just called the Roadhouse, which he thinks is funny.
Yeah.
It's not called the Double Deuce
it's
anymore.
Not.
Although, if you do look at the surroundings in the town,
sighting.
There's a Double Deuce restaurant, so they're getting that Easter egg in there. But anyway, a big developer, a big rich developer in the Keys there wants the Roadhouse gone. He wants to buy it up to make room for a big resort. She won't sell. So, of course, he wants it gone in other ways. And there's fights every night. So she gets Dalton in there to take care of things. And you know how that story goes. And it sticks to pretty much the same plan. He breaks up all the bar fights. There's a lot of bar fights. And then the bad guys try to think up ways to bring him down. And one of those ways is bringing in their enforcer, Knox, played by Conor McGregor.
Who does not take it down a notch.
No, my God, does he not?
He's like a big old cartoon character.
He is. He's a cartoon character. So when you're really judging for his future in the movies, it's hard because he's just playing his UFC persona. He's just all the way, all over the top. And it works. It works for this character. Now, is he going to play something in a chamber piece drama? I don't know about that. And he also shows his whole ass. When you see the nudity on this, it's just him. It's just him and his butt walking just proud as he can, stark naked through a town square. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. But so it's fun. I mean, it's fun the way it embraces the ridiculousness of this entire premise, a bouncer saving the town. And I will say, I think by moving it to the Florida Keys, and we've spent a lot of time in the Florida Keys. They, even though they don't film there, I guess they filmed in the Dominican Republic. It looks very good. They do have some shots of the 7 Mile Bridge, which is pretty much, when you're going to film in the Keys, that's obligatory. And even though people as a whole aren't nearly sweaty enough, it looks pretty right. And I think moving it there makes the ridiculous premise maybe seem a little more possible, maybe a little.
Sure.
But all in all, it is fun. And I'm already seeing a lot of response on social media that's the way people are taking it. Just fun.
Yeah.
And even if you think the Patrick Swayze one is a stone cold classic, I still think, and not in an ironic way, I think you're going to have fun with this. They don't make it a complete comedy, but it's funny enough that they're winking, going, look, we know. Come on, let's just have some fun with this. And I'm all in.
Well, I think that's the only way you could do it,
exactly.
You know, because you can't recreate that self-serious 80s.
Yep.
You just can't.
No. And again, the stunts and the fights are all top notch. And I hate to spoil anything for anybody that was hoping for a Sam Elliott cameo, but no, doesn't show up. And yeah. I guess a lot of people were hoping for that.
Yeah.
And I can see.
Yeah.
I mean,
since his character dies in the first one,
well,
you
wouldn't
wonder,
have to be the same character.
It would just be it couldn't be.
Yeah. But just having him show up.
Yeah.
It would have been cool.
It would have been.
It would have
yeah.
been.
Oh, you
that.
Know, anytime you can get Sam Elliott
well,
to
right.
show up in something, that's
yeah.
cool.
Yeah. So anyway, it's fun though. And it's on Prime. So just another reason, if you already have it, just fire it up and you'll get a kick out of it, I think. And that is The New Roadhouse. Hey, let's do a couple horror films back to back. Want to? Cecilia, a woman of devout faith, is warmly welcomed to the picture-perfect Italian countryside where she is offered a new role at an illustrious convent. But it all becomes clear to Cecilia that her new home harbors dark and horrifying secrets. This is Sydney Sweeney starring in Immaculate.
It's a miracle. You are with child.
Out of all the women in the world,
why did he choose me?
How can we trust what's inside you?
Suffering is love. Suffering.
Love. Well, I don't think we're afraid to say that we did not expect this movie to be this good.
No, we did not. Nuns in horror, it's a really, 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 really common trope in horror movies because there's a lot of different reasons. First of all, if you went through Catholic school, you're childhood terror.
As you did.
Childhood terror of nuns, mm-hmm. which is The Nun, and all of those movies point out that can be very, very scary. There's also there are a lot of movies about pregnant nuns.
Yep.
And, in fact, there was one just last year.
Mm-hmm. Was that the one that I reviewed?
Yeah, Deliver Us. Yeah.
And that's the one, and I always point out, we often point out when we're reviewing these Catholic horrors. I mean, you are a tough judge because you make sure they get it right.
The Catholicism of it, because
you have lived it. And one of the things that the other one did that I pointed out, because you hit me to it, was that the Immaculate Conception does not refer to Jesus' conception.
No, not when Mary got pregnant.
Right.
That is not the Immaculate Conception. It's when Mary's mother got pregnant with her.
Right.
Because
now,
Mary had to be born without original sin. The Immaculate Conception.
A lot of movies make that mistake. This one does not.
No, it doesn't. So that's, good. A good going for them. I mean, it does. There are some very stupid sort of science-y kind of things about it. But and then there's also the other point of it is, of course, is the idea that we're really just going to ogle the idea of this. Nuns are not that good looking. Like a really beautiful nun, they're uncommon. And, in this movie, every nun who isn't already an old hag is stunning.
But I will say, especially when this movie was written and directed by men.
Yes.
The director is Michael Mohan and the writer is Andrew Lobel. And with Sydney Sweeney starring in it, it doesn't ogle her as much as maybe men going to this movie might hope.
Here's the thing, though. Here's the thing to keep in mind, especially as you point out that both filmmakers are men. And this is the reason that there are a couple reasons we did really like this movie. Well, first of all, it does. It looks great.
It does.
Production values are great. It's a gorgeous movie. Second, though, when it finally goes there, it's bloody. It's mean.
Oh,
it
yes.
goes there. But third and most importantly, this movie, better than most, is just fueled by feminine rage mm-hmm. in such a very realistic and cathartic and mean way.
Yeah.
But it does in a way that I don't think any other of these Catholic horror films has done, is that it shows really well how organized religion is built on, uses, absolutely, it's built on silencing, bullying, vilifying, controlling women and their bodies.
Mm-hmm.
That also, one of the other things I think is really interesting about this movie, because it's set in a convent and there are a handful of men, but of course there's many, 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 many women, is how effectively organized religions and other groups use the women who have already been bullied and punished into submission. Those women then work together to help bully other women into submission. Yeah. And I think that this movie, I mean, it takes it up a notch to make it full-blown horror, but it's more insightful in the way it executes those ideas than any of the other women in, or excuse me, Catholic horror films I've seen.
Yeah, that's why I was really surprised to see both written and directed both by men.
Yeah.
Sydney Sweeney is very good in
this.
She's also an executive producer. And it was interesting. I think we both mentioned, or I mentioned after we were talking, after we saw this, about two-thirds into it, I thought to myself, well, people that are coming to this really wanting a horror movie are going to be disappointed. Oh, no.
Nope.
No, I spoke too soon. Because once this movie goes there, it goes there.
Oh,
and it's
it does.
Not afraid.
No.
And it has
it's
some...
It's fearless.
It has some balls to
yeah.
it. And there are people that are not going to be happy
yeah.
about where it goes. And it
no.
doesn't care. And I give it credit for that.
Yeah. You know, if you like the Nun movies, right? And we don't dislike them, but those movies are really built on a respect for the Catholic Church. This is not.
Mm-mm, mm-mm.
But the other thing that I appreciate about this, there are a lot of horror movies that are built on a disrespect for the Catholic Church, and they tend to not be Catholic.
Yeah.
They're the ones where you're like, yeah, you don't even know anything about the religion at all, so it just feels like a straw man. This is something that I can poke at and not understand it.
Mm-hmm.
This movie feels like it understands Catholicism. It understands organized religion. You don't have to be Catholic for this to be happening. Look at almost any organized religion and the way that it silences and uses and abuses and vilifies women for its own self-interest.
And it also is clearly interested in, I mean, it mentions a couple of times, the meek shall inherit the earth, so obey, and also just women as birthing vessels.
Oh, yeah.
That's all you have to worry about.
That's right.
That's it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And it's but like we said, it still manages to be horror. Just give it time.
I remember when I was a little kid, my dad, nuns have to take a vow of poverty, chastity, and obedience.
Right.
And I tried to clarify that I was a little kid. I said, well, priests do too, right? and because priests, you know, they don't make a lot of money, but they do get paid. Nuns don't get paid. And of course they are supposed to. They take a vow of chastity, but they are not expected to be obedient. And I just was, I mean, I was like 7 years old going, well, what sense does that make? You know, so all of these women have to be obedient. I was like, who are they obedient to? To God? To anybody who has to tell them anything to do?
Yep.
To the whole hierarchy? To the men who run the church? And that's, you know, right there, man. Yeah, don't do it. Don't ever take a vow of obedience. Don't do it.
And also, you get a strong vibe in this movie of Italian horror. Especially,
yeah.
Like you said, it looks good, it sounds good,
yeah.
And you get
there's a little Argento score,
yeah,
a little bit
so.
Going on. No, I agree with you.
Very much so.
I was so impressed by it.
Yeah, we were too. So, and we admit we had lower expectations.
We did.
And sometimes that does benefit the movie, but yeah, it pulled it through and not afraid to be horrific and not afraid to go places confidently, especially at the end. So if you're... That sounds good to you. Check it out. It is in the theaters now called Immaculate. Okay, another blast of horror with a live television broadcast in 1977 that goes horribly wrong and unleashes evil into the nation's living rooms. This is Late Night with the Devil.
Please welcome Dr. June Ross Mitchell and Lily, the young subject of the book, Conversations with the Devil.
I really don't think it's a good idea, Jack. She's becoming more unpredictable.
That's a good thing. That's why we still do what? TV.
Ladies and gentlemen, please stay tuned for a live television first as we attempt to commune with the devil.
Lily, can you hear me?
Good to see you again, Jack.
Lily, return to me.
This isn't about ratings anymore.
No one's going anywhere.
How could you let it happen, Jack? How could you let it happen?
Please be warned, anyone with young children in the room.
Go to a commercial!
You're about to see...
You okay, Jack?
It's profoundly disturbing and shocking.
You get out there, Mr. Midnight. And you knock him dead.
Boy, a lot of people were looking forward to this one.
Including us.
And it's another one that delivers. This is fun. This one is not, I mean, it's not going to scare the bejesus out of you.
No.
But it delivers the fun. And man, it gets the throwback vibe right. There are a lot of good performances in it.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's just a lot of fun. The writers and directors, they share the duties. The Australian brothers, the Cairns.
Yes.
How do you pronounce it? Colin and Cameron.
And they made, probably at least 10 years ago now, they made a movie that we love called 100 Bloody Acres.
Right.
Very fun, very weird.
Yeah, and it's much more of a straight out comedy than this is. There's humor in this because it's based around a late night TV show. You get an early prologue with some foreboding narration by none other than Michael Ironside.
Love it.
That tells us what we're going to see is footage, both broadcast footage and behind the scenes footage from the last episode of this talk show called Night Owls with Jack Delroy. And Jack Delroy is played by David Desmalchian.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's how you pronounce it.
Yeah, and if you don't know the name, you will know his face.
You'll know his face.
Because he's got a very memorable face.
Very. And he's finally getting a chance to carry a movie here, and he's very good. Very good. He's as the host, Jack Delroy. And the show has had some success throughout the early 70s, but now we're in the late 70s, and it's floundering a little bit. Mm-hmm. He's trying to compete with Carson.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody, I will say this too, your appreciation for the movie will deepen if, like me, maybe you grew up with Carson and you're going to recognize some of these characters that are his guests. You're going to know who they're supposed to be.
Who they're kind of based on.
Who they're based on as the guests come on this show. And that's fun. But even if you don't, they get the vibe right. They get the look right. And he's got this talk show, and there's sort of a gamble that he's going to throw to try to save it.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the guests on the show, or two of the guests, on this fateful episode, there's a doctor who has written a book, and she comes on with her young patient who has suffered some severe trauma and now possibly is possessed by a demon.
Mm-hmm.
That's, I guess we'll leave it at that.
Mm-hmm.
But the cool thing is, because of the setup, we know as an audience that what the people we're watching don't know. Because we know, obviously, something horrific went down.
Right, because this is the last episode.
Right, and so what's it going to be, and when are we going to get there? So it does take a little while to get there. It's a bit of a slow burn.
Not a slog at all.
No, it's just, not a slog.
It really repays you for your patience.
Yeah, it's not a slog, because you are sort of watching a fun, kitschy talk show from the 70s. Mm-hmm. The humor is cheesy,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The wardrobe is right, and mm-hmm. You've got these characters on there that you may or may not recognize, that it is fun. And then slowly you start getting around to interviewing this doctor and having her possibly possessed patient on there, and then things get crazy. They keep the vibe intact by going the mostly practical effects route.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is, and there's also, you know, Michael Ironside is doing the voiceover at the beginning, and then there are a couple of just shots that of like the Ed McMahon character sitting in a chair and
Gus,
he's being kind
Gus,
of
yeah.
Gus that look very much like Scanners, and it doesn't end up in a Scanners way, but it's just a couple of nice sort of Cronenberg odes, and I think that, you know, as Cronenberg did at that time, I think that the practical effects really do help to bolster the timestamp of this being made in the 70s.
Yeah. If they did a bunch of CGI wizardry, it wouldn't feel right.
Mm-hmm.
It
mm-hmm.
wouldn't feel right at all, because they get the rest of it with the production design and everything else so right. And it's a good cast, not only Desmalchian, but the supporting players. And you start to learn a little bit of a backstory. The host, Delroy, has maybe some shady things mm-hmm. going on leading up to the show that we didn't know about. And it's fun getting there and how it, the fireworks at the end, again, it's not terrifying,
mm-mm.
but it delivers enough of a horrific punch at the end that I think it's very satisfying.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Very, very enjoyable.
Yeah.
And like you said, we were looking forward to it, and we were entertained, and this is in the theaters too. Well, it's a Shudder film, right?
So it will hit Shudder soon, but right now it is in theaters. It's not on Shudder.
Yeah. So check it out. It's a lot of fun. Called Late Night with the Devil. Well, let's do more horror and go back to Shudder. This one is on Shudder. Patrick, strange and lonely resident, lives in a mobile home at the back of an isolated trailer park. After a violent storm, a mysterious young woman appears at his door, seeking shelter from the elements. This one's called You'll Never Find Me.
You've never been here before. You have a familiar face.
I should probably get out of your way.
I don't think you can. I'm just messing with you. Did you tell someone you were coming here? What are you actually doing here tonight?
drawn to unhappy endings.
Like a population of fucking moths. Who are you hiding from?
Indiana Bell wrote this and co-directs it with Josiah...
Allen.
Allen, thank you.
That's a good name. Indiana Bell.
It is. Two N's. Indiana. And it's a movie that's very interesting. It's super atmospheric. The sound design is great. The lighting design is great. It's very, very, very sort of close. You're almost the whole time you're inside with just these two people. You're inside this trailer. They've got some great pans to the outside of the trailer park itself, which makes the whole movie feel very kind of isolated and creepy. And then there's this constant storm, and you hear that the whole time. It is the film does a great job with building suspense, and then they're really only two actors in the film, and the way they shoot each one, you're never entirely sure. You know something's wrong with one of them, and the way they shoot it, you're never sure which one it is. Is she in jeopardy because she's come to this stranger's house? Or is he in jeopardy because he let the stranger in his house? I really appreciated that. I think for me, the way the story, the third act, the way it sort of reveals itself wasn't as satisfying as I'd hoped. It was a little bit more predictable than I had hoped that it would be. But I was very invested in both of these characters, and I really loved the way the film was shot.
Well, you know, it's interesting. You mentioned just the two characters, so... Normally, when you say chamber piece, you're thinking of some stuffy English drama, but this technically could qualify as a chamber piece.
Absolutely, it could. It's just two people. You're inside this one place almost the entire time. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you've got Brendan Rock plays Patrick. That's another good name. and then Jordan Cowan plays the visitor. So there are a couple of other roles, but basically, yeah, a two-person show and very framed the way it's framed with the, you know, when a constant storm.
Yeah.
You know, immediately it'll set a mood just by hearing the thunder, the lightning, whatever. But when it never lets up.
Yeah.
Never. Mm-hmm. Then that'll just wear on you as a viewer like it wears on these characters.
Yeah. And as much as, you know, the longer you're in there, the more you're like, one of these people has got to get out of here. But you're pretty convinced that they can't also.
Yeah. Because early on, doesn't he say something like, well, as soon as this storm lets up.
Yeah.
Okay. When's that going to be?
Right.
Yeah, so this is another solid entry from Shudder, and it's on there now, so you can find it, even though it's called You'll Never Find Me. All right, let's lighten the mood with an action-adventure comedy. Three mischievous children embark on a woodland odyssey when their mother sends them on an errand. It's called Riddle of Fire.
You're in a lot of trouble, Paddle.
Oh, my God. Your life and your destiny, that is yours for the choosing, but you have to choose, and you have to create it.
I'm gonna get you, kids!
That's amore.
Matt Wiener reviewed this one for us at madwolf.com. Loved it.
Loved it, loved it. This is from writer-director Weston Rizzulli.
Another great name.
Yeah, definitely another great name. And it's an adventure mainly with kids, but he also, as Matt pointed out, the mom characters played by Leo Tipton.
One of the mom characters.
Yeah, one of the mom characters. And you might remember her. She was the young girl in love with Steve Carell in Crazy Stupid Love.
Yeah.
She's grown up.
She has.
And now she's playing a mom character. But Matt said she's terrific. And he really enjoyed this movie.
Yeah, very inventive. It's got sort of a Goonies feel about
it
a little bit, but also maybe a little bit Mandy. You remember that one with Nicolas Cage? So that's a combination I can get behind.
And
just one of those films that is just delightful beginning to end. And it's a first feature for this filmmaker. So an amazing job.
And he does also play a small role, but populated with great young kids as well. Which is always fun. So by all means, check out Matt's full review, and you can find that at madwolf.com. But he gives a recommendation for Riddle of Fire, and that one's in theaters now. And one more this week, a documentary. Nabi, a veteran fire officer, accepts the coming out from her child. Meanwhile, Vivian, part of a flight crew, receives a letter from her son saying, I'm gay. They confide in their struggles even before the two mothers understand their reality. This is called Coming to You.
우리 개인 아들이 사랑하는 사람과 가정을 이루어 사회적으로 인정받고 당당하고 행복하게 사는 꿈 저도 매일매일 꾸고 싶습니다.
This is from writer-director Gyuri Byun, and I hope I pronounced that right. But Christy Robb reviewed this on MadWolf.com.
Yeah, really, really loved it. I think the only kind of downside of this is that you don't get much of the perspective of the two queer adult children.
Yeah.
But the fact that you spend so much time with their mothers, it gives you a good sense of, first of all, what it's like in, because this is they're in Korea.
Yeah.
And what it's like to try to accept and also protect and also be an ally of your queer children in a very conservative environment. And that's really the focus of the movie. And it's really, it's lovely. It's lovely to see these parents really work to listen and understand and just continue to love their children. Just to be good parents.
Yeah,
really.
Exactly. It focuses on their experience. Also their experiences with the group called PFLAG Korea. And so you're going to have some happy times and yes, some sad times too. Be ready for that. But a story definitely worth telling and worth seeing. And you can check out Christy's full review at madwolf.com. But the movie's called Coming to You and it's on VOD now. Hey, it's been too long. Let's head to the lobby.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby.
Missed him last week, so we're back in the lobby checking in with Daniel Baldwin, a.k.a. the Schlocketeer, for all the latest studio news. What's happening?
Well, the second installment of France's new epic Three Musketeers film series, The Three Musketeers Part 2, Milady, will hit premium VOD on April 19th. Sony has once again moved up the release of their horror film Tarot. It will now arrive in theaters on May 3rd. Still bummed that that one's not called Horoscope anymore.
Yeah. Although, the trailer looks terrible.
Yeah. Maybe we should save it for a film more deserving. And then Magnolia Pictures has set a June 21st theatrical release for the Sundance favorite Thelma, which is a comedy where June Squibb plays a 93-year-old woman who's been duped by a phone scammer and goes on a quest to reclaim her money.
Yes!
Don't get in June Squibb's
no,
way.
No, man, I wouldn't do it.
And it also has the final film role of Richard Roundtree.
Oh! Okay, didn't know that. Great.
And then we're moving on to a bunch of 2025 announcements. The action cinema gods are smiling upon me again next year because Lionsgate has stated Guy Ritchie's untitled Henry Cavill and Jake Gyllenhaal action thriller for January 17th. And Amazon MGM has set Jason Statham's next film, Levon's Trade, for the exact same date.
Wow.
Nice birthday double feature for me if both hold to those dates.
Fisticuff Palooza on that day.
Yes. And previously set for a spring release this year, Warner Brothers has pushed back Bong Joon-ho's sci-fi adventure Mickey 17 to January 31st of next year. Current word is that it just needs a whole lot more time in post-production and for special effects work after delays due to the strike.
Fair enough.
And then in a show of confidence, Universal has pushed back the release of Megan 2.0. It was originally set for January next year, and now it's coming out instead on May 16th of next year. Big date for that one. And Lionsgate's pushed back the release of Anya de Armas' John Wick spinoff Ballerina to June 6th of next year. Apparently it needs a big round of additional photography that it wasn't able to complete back during the fall, again due to the strikes. All right, Universal has set a July 22nd, 2025 release for the next installment in the Jurassic Park and Jurassic World series. This one's going to kick off a brand new trilogy with new characters, so they're not carrying over Chris Pratt or anyone else from the last few. And Rogue One and the creator filmmaker Gareth Edwards is lined up to direct this one.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Hopefully it'll be better than Jurassic World Dominion.
Yes
please.
And then Paramount has set a July 18th, 2025 theatrical release for their Naked Gun Legacy sequel, which will star Liam Neeson as Frank Drebin Jr.
That's right. That's right. That could be funny.
Yeah, it's from the same people who did Hot Rod and what was that? Pop Star, Never Stop, Never Stopping.
Oh, yeah, okay. The Lonely Island Group.
Yep. So hopefully that'll turn out really well.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last thing I have for you is Paramount has set an August 8th, 2025 theatrical release for Brian Bertino's next horror film, Vicious, which will star Dakota Fanning.
Ooh.
Okay. Very cool. All right. Looking forward to all that. You can always get the latest news and notes from Daniel. You can follow him on the socials at The Schlocketeer. Thanks again.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Okay, looking ahead to next week. It seems maybe a little superfluous after minus one, but we're back to more Godzilla and Kong. Next week, we'll get Godzilla times Kong, the new empire.
I know you're looking forward to that.
It's just, you know what? It's just after minus one, what
I
are
know.
They doing?
I know.
I see the trailer and they're running together and just high five. Just high five.
Oh, I want him to kiss. I want him to kiss. Another one coming out next week, Easter, Bloody Easter.
Right. Early Bird.
Mad Props.
Golden Years.
Chimera.
Now I'm singing David Bowie. Golden. Against All Enemies.
And Lousy Carter.
Okay. That's next week. But boy, a lot to chew on this week. We've got Ghostbusters. We've got Roadhouse. Late Night with the Devil. Immaculate. Man, it's a lot to, lots worthy of conversation there. So what do you think? Keep the conversation going. We love it. That's easy to do. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Threads at Mad Wolf Columbus. And the main website, madwolf.com, you can find all of our written reviews and our other horror movie-only podcast, getting ready to record a new one here in a couple of days called Fright Club. That's all there for you at madwolf.com. So keep in touch. Hope so. Enjoy the movies. Until next week, she is Hope Madden.
He's George Wolf.
And this is the Screening Room Podcast.
See ya.
I do wish we could chat longer, but I'm having an old friend for dinner. Bye.
Okay, everybody, that's a wrap.